Dexter Gordon and Johnny Griffin, both on tenor sax, with Blues Up and Down. This was taped at Carnegie Hall in 1976. And the band includes George Cables on piano, Rufus Reed on bass, and Eddie Gladden on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it's quite an eventful day, I should say. But we have to get through it. I want to connect now with a friend of this program. He's more than a friend of this program. He's practically a co-worker with this program. And he has just returned from Haiti. And we want to get some updates on that. His name is Kim Ives. He is the editor of the English version or the English editions of Haiti Liberté. And he has been a very much contributor to the program. He travels to Haiti quite frequently. And he's about to tell us about his most recent return from Haiti. Hello, Kim. Glad that you could be with us today.
Hi, Eutrice. It's good to be with you a week after we talked last time. It's hopefully the connection will be much better this time.
All right. Well, we have something in common today, and it's toothache problems.
Yes.
I, too, have to get to the dentist to figure out what to do with some broken teeth I have here. But anyway, that was as a result of a fall I sustained, and now it's really giving me a way to go. But tell us about what you found in Haiti. You told us some of that. How is Haiti since you've left it?
Well, Eutrice, I've been working around and covering Haiti since 42 years, since 1977, and I've never, ever seen anything like this. This is just the most gritty, determined, and astonishing rebellion I've seen. We're now really going on a year of uprisings like this, but this last one has been going on now for this last spasm, if I can say, has been going on for about 2 weeks. I was there on the 30th, which was the 28th anniversary of the coup d'etat against Jean-Bertrand Aristide in 1991, which was really a seminal event. It really set the stage for everything we're seeing, because since that time, since the democracy that Haiti gave birth to in that December 1990 election, and the U.S. organized a September 30th, 1991 coup d'etat, Haiti has had nothing but trouble, and is really the culmination of that, because the U.S. basically installed, not to reiterate all the history, but a regime called the Haitian Bald-Headed Party, PHTK, and this was also thanks to Hillary Clinton, who really was the midwife of his insertion, and Martelly gave us the current president, who is Jovenel Moïse. Now, between the two of them and their cronies, they basically stole about three quarters of a tremendous fund Venezuela had given to Haiti, a loan. We talked about the Petrocaribe Fund, which was about $2 billion. And cheap gas. And now they have neither. And the result is this crisis that in the country. There are huge gas lines everywhere. If you can get any gas, there's a black market with people along the side of the road with little plastic jugs of gas they'll put in you. But most of it is so expensive, close to $6 for a gallon, that it's mostly the motorcycles which can get by with it. So, and not only from the gas point of view, but from the barricades. Utrecht, there are barricades everywhere, everywhere on every street, even back streets, side streets. Everybody has a barricade up. And to get through the barricade, it's very hard to go through with a car. It's mostly a motorcycle which can squeeze by if they let you through. And so the country is just saying Jovenel Moïse, the president since February of 2017, has got to go. Now, right now, as we speak, there are masses in the street. They are gathering in front of the palace. The opposition has called them to go and tell Jovenel to leave. This is following a huge march, just monstrous. On Friday, thousands and thousands of people poured into the street and marched in front of the UN, basically telling the UN to stand far. The night before, on Thursday, October 3rd, the Security Council had an informal meeting, followed by the Dominican Republic, which shares the island of Haiti. The whole island is called Haiti originally by the Arawak Indians. The Spanish renamed it Hispaniola. But Dominican Republic called the meeting, and it was what they call a quote-unquote brainstorming. But a lot of people have twisted this one way or the other to say that the UN is going to intervene, or that the UN is going to support the government, or et cetera, which none of which was the case. It was mostly just the same old bureaucratic platitudes and double talk. But there are divisions between the U.S. and France and Canada, who are the principal, I could say, imperialist powers with sway in Haiti on how to proceed. So that may be part of the problem. And of course, China and Russia on the Security Council are going to veto anything which the U.S. May try to throw its weight around, because they're, of course, not on very good terms with Washington these days either. So there's the situation. The people are in the streets. The regime is teetering on the edge. And it's, I mean, if this were any administration other than Trump, I'm sure the State Department would have given the Jovenel regime the old heave-ho. But at this point, they seem to be keeping him mainly because he's an ally in their struggle against Nicolas Maduro in Venezuela. Ironically, the very regime that gave Haiti $4.3 billion worth of cheap gas is now the target of Haiti's vote, who is voting with the U.S. against Nicolas Maduro, saying he's illegitimate. So there, and this is partly driving the outrage and anger of the masses. Just one last thing. I know it's a short spot, but on Friday also in Miami, I was passing through Miami on my way back up to New York here, and had a chance to see the Haitian community speaking to Nancy Pelosi, who was with the local representative, Frederica Wilson, at a community center in North Miami there. And it was interesting because the four of the women, very outspoken, basically let Pelosi have it and said, listen, we need that government out, but we don't want you meddling. We want our sovereignty. Stand back and don't start to meddle again. And one of them said, you know, we did very well with Maduro. We did very well with the Venezuelans. And this really was got what Pelosi's hackles up. And at the end, she said, well, I can't go out of this meeting without saying Maduro is a thug, and to which the whole room snickered. This once again shows the bipartisan nature of the U.S. power standing against these countries which have the temerity to stand up to Washington's power in the hemisphere. So I'll stand there, Utrice, and take it where you will.
I just thought it was a very interesting thing that the protest is actually standing behind a conviction that the United States must not interfere. Do not interfere. We have this. This is our fight. It's not yours. How is that going to go with Pelosi?
Well, that's just it. Pelosi got her hackles up. I mean, when it was a very funny meeting. It was supposed to be 10 panelists, but there were ended up being 6. There were 2 men and 4 women. The 2 men said just empty nothings, local commissioner and a local state representative. But the 3 women, who are all more or less community activists for decades, Marlene Bastien, Gypsy Metilus, teacher Carlene, and Karen André, who is the daughter of famed protest singer Farah Just. They, particularly Karen André, she started it, and they just lit into Pelosi. And Pelosi basically had to, you know, backtrack out of the room, of course, throwing the Maduro's a thug remark over her shoulder. This is what the Haitian experience has been over the past 33 years, is first, the U.S. whisked Duvalier out of the country with all his sports cars and his wife's furs on a C-130. Then they held back this democratic movement that came after it until Aristide was elected in a landslide in 1990. Then they gave him a coup. They intervened in the country and brought a UN occupation, military occupation, the only one in the hemisphere for 4 or 5 years. Then Aristide was reelected in 2000. They gave him another coup and brought another military occupation. And finally, the U.S. brought in, as I say, Hillary Clinton flew down in January 30th, 2011, and basically read then President René Préval Ryadec said, you got to put Martelly in the runoff. Martelly won, and ever since, it's been an even more precipitous decline. So the Haitians are fed up with U.S. quote unquote help, and the core group met last week. And this is one last thing that your listeners should understand. Right now, we're entering a period, there's no clear leadership. There's no real alternative. Even the opposition, of which there are 2 branches, one called the Alternative Consensus and the other one called Fusion of Papai or something to that effect. So there are 2 groups, but they're kind of Trojan horses, because the bourgeoisie, Haiti's very greedy, venal, coup-making bourgeoisie, is insinuated in both of them, and a lot of the rats who have left the sinking ship of Jovenel have gotten into it. Politicians like Yuri Latoutou, a former death squad leader, known as Mr. 30% for the cuts, bribes he would take, who's now supposedly leading the anti-corruption campaign, guys like Joseph Lambert and others, have joined this opposition. So the people, and they're calling also for a quote-unquote third way, in particular Reginald Bulos, one of the most villainous figures of the bourgeoisie, calling for a third way. Well, the masses aren't having any of it. They said there is no third way. There's just the people's way, the popular way. So they understand that we may be facing another 4 or 5 years of struggle before we have a regime in place that's not a provisional government, which will be replaced after 2 or 3 weeks or months.
So the struggle really does continue. Thanks so much, right, Tim, for sharing your time with us and for thinking of us actually as a place where people tune in to find out what's going on in Haiti. And when we talk about what's going on in Haiti, we think of you. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks a lot, Utrice, and hold the torch high. Thanks.
Thank you. Well, as you can tell, we have had to turn around our program day to day because of events outside of PRN, and we'll know more about it as time goes on. Probably by the end of the day, there ought to be a comprehensive understanding of what went on at WBAI, which I understand is not broadcasting. It has been shut down. So that is a momentous development. We'll take this break and talk about the other one, the other momentous development in Washington, D.C., right after this. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.fm. Got some sad news over the weekend that Sybil Williams Clark, the widow of Dr. John Henrik Clark, passed away peacefully in her Harlem home. And, you know, everybody seems to be taking off and leaving us here to figure it out. But they did, in many cases, give us what we needed and what we still do need to find our way. Sybil Williams Clark, like Dr. John Henrik Clark, was a historian, a Pan-Africanist, and deeply, deeply connected to and dedicated to the Harlem community. She was 97 years old. There will be a celebration of her life in the form of a memorial service, but that is slated for Saturday, October the 19th, at Benta's Funeral Home, which is on St. Nicholas Avenue, and that would be 145th Street, at 10 a.m. And immediately following will be a burial at Rosedale, Rose Hill Cemetery in Linden, New Jersey. Viewing will be held at Benta's from 4 to 8 p.m. on Friday, October the 18th. Great loss, but she had been hanging in there, and finally she couldn't hang in anymore. You know, we have been blessed, and it is important for us to cherish what we have been blessed with and make sure we use it the way they intended us to use it, and that is to advance and promote the knowledge, the information, the history that we still are amassing. So finally, she has gone on to meet Dr. John Henrik Clark, and I'm sure that that would be a fantastic meeting, just the two of them together. I wanted to talk about this situation that we find ourselves in with Donald Trump. As I said, we're going to change up the program a bit because of time constraints and get into it more deeply tomorrow. But I'm going to ask you, what is your take on where we are with this Donald Trump and his craziness, and the Republicans and their craziness, and the Democrats and their craziness. What do you make of what is happening here? Have you been able to make any sense of it so far? 888-874-4888 is the number to call. Just opinions will do for the rest of the program today, and return to more substantive discussions tomorrow. But there's enough that we have seen and heard that should trouble us about where we are. What are your thoughts and ideas? 888-874-4888 is the number to call. I was struck by the fact that a former vice president of Trump, the Trump Organization, said it is her view, and you know, you can't dismiss it, it is her view that Trump might resign rather than risk or go through impeachment. It is her view that Trump cannot take that kind of humiliation, the humiliation of an impeachment. And he certainly has gotten enough hints already that this is very deep trouble. He can't just undo it. He can't slip out of it very easily. He has to face the music. He's not accustomed to facing the music. He's accustomed to winning. But when you look at what is happening, you see indications that Trump is freaking out. He is losing his grip, and people are even beginning to turn on him. Republicans are even beginning to turn on him. That's not a good sign. But what do you think? I don't know. And frankly, my thoughts are elsewhere. In all of this, my thoughts are someplace else. And it has to do with, what are we going to do? How do we respond? This thing has been taken over. They're running the show. And as usual, there's no multiplicity of thought about it. It's just the same group of people who basically step into the breach when something like this happens, and they take over. And the rest of the country simply has to follow along. I'm not of that school of thought. But just the same, it's worth noticing how in the United States, this bifurcated society, we see how it is run. And still people are likely to say, well, that's not true. It's just an aberration. It is a thing that happens from time to time. You get a situation that defies history, defies our logic, defies our sense of what is right and wrong, but it's a national problem, and in the end, people will come together and solve it. I am not of that school. I think this is a major problem, but not in the way that it is usually defined. For me, this is not about a constitutional question. We've had this constitutional question for centuries in this country. It is about essentially a change that we allowed to see the festering sore that white supremacy delivers. It gives us this. And then it is compounded by greed. by people who have ideas of what is due to them, what power they should have, how much money they ought to have. What will they do with the rest of us who have no money and we occupying very, very valuable real estate? That's how they see us. They do not see us as part of the fabric of American life. Not at all. You are in the way of progress. We are in the way of the forward thrust of the society. They are the ones who have the brilliance. They are the ones who have the knowledge. They are the ones who have the vision. And if only we would just obey. But then you turn that around as if only you were smart. If only you were competent. If only you were capable. If only you were honest. This is the dilemma of America now. The vast majority of people want to do the right thing, and they do the right thing. They pay their taxes, but we see what the government does with tax money. This is going to be a big discussion for the rest of us. Okay, 888-874-4888. Let's see who's on. Oh, I don't see anybody calling in just yet. A little slow today. What's going on with you? I am slow. Only one of us is allowed to be slow at a time. I've got dibs on that today. But I need you to give us your perspective. As a citizen of this country, or maybe not even a citizen, but you're living here in this country long enough to arrive at some opinions about it. What is your opinion now of this country? What does it mean to you to be here at this time dealing with this nonsense? Do you feel that we are growing? Do you feel that this is a just society, that people know what they're doing in terms of how best to lift all boats? No, that's not what's going on. Ron from Connecticut, you're on the air. Hello, Ron.
Yeah. Hi, Utrice.
Hello.
Last, can you hear me?
Yes, but a little bit muddled.
Yeah, I had to take off the teapot. It was starting to make noise. Last Thursday, you brought up the personage of Rudy Giuliani.
Yes.
And I was itching to comment, and I didn't get a chance on Friday. So do you think it's more apropos that I wait, or do you feel that that Rudy Giuliani is kind of exemplary of what's going on, who's so-called running things, and what his...
I kind of know Rudolph Giuliani for quite a while, especially as a reporter. And there's something very scary about that man.
Oh, yes. Undoubtedly.
I mean, even his lips have gotten thinner. You know, it looks like he's just so mean.
Especially when he smiles. They get even thinner then. And the teeth.
But this is the kind of people that would gravitate to a Donald Trump. Because they have a shared view of who deserves to have power and status. They come from generations that had neither. They had no money, they had no status. And then the Trump generation started now to enter into spheres of influence because by then they had acquired some wealth through their parents' efforts, a generational wealth. And with that, they cultivated the idea of status, but it's a different definition than it was in previous years. Rudolph Giuliani has always been a very mean man. Very mean. Very nasty. Unforgiving. Vengeful. And when a government has enough of people like that, you know where it's going.
Oh, yes.
That's a, you know, it's a cultivating the character of meanness. It cultivates it as part of the, how do I call it, the character of the nation. It becomes meaner and meaner.
Yes.
But they're not honest people. I mean, Rudolph Giuliani would have you believe that he was, you know, the greatest Catholic of all time. But he didn't live the life of a Catholic, the greatest Catholic of all time.
Yeah.
He's a very mean person.
Yes.
You look at Donald Trump. Okay, so you have great wealth. But why are you so nasty? Even to yourself, so mean, even to your children.
Yes. It's becoming systemic because it has its influence over the entire culture. You see everybody following too.
And it's going beyond our borders as well. We have governments, entire governments, that are infected with this way of thinking and operating. And pretty soon we'd find much of the world being a very unpleasant place to live in. And it inevitably would lead to conflict, big time conflict. So,
Utrice, I have to say something about Giuliani, because I really, you know, I have to thank you for shining your X-ray vision on him, because I don't know many people who understand what a dangerous, dangerous person Attorney Giuliani is. And I would draw a comparison. If Trump is the would-be dictator, then Giuliani is the would-be Heinrich Himmler, a bureaucrat, by most standards, but so dangerous. I think that Giuliani wants to execute some really evil agendas. I believe that he and Trump, well, you know, they go back way before 9/11. And who was the top cop in New York City during that event? Who was actually stationed in Building 7 and was warned that it was about to go down and left? Where did he go to? He went to one of the piers on the Hudson, which had been set up as a training exercise for just an event. So there it was, ready for him to make a smooth transition and look all organized. Who oversaw the removal of probably millions of tons, Utrice, of steel? Chinese barges were just there, Johnny, on the spot. These things take several months to plan. So it just looked like a very well-executed project of getting rid of all the major evidence of the 9/11.
But we don't know. We still don't know yet. I've done enough programs on it. There's still so much to know about what happened there. And I don't feel sufficiently schooled to say I know what happened. I'm still with the larger majority of people trying to figure it out. Thanks for getting us started today.
Okay.
Thank you for your call. Gwen from New York, you're on the air.
Hi, Utrice.
Hey.
How are you? I have been working, but I'm not now. And I just wanted to throw this into the mix, if you don't mind, because you're not living in New York, but I guess maybe you do or don't know this. I would say when I ran for city council in 2017, 37.5% of the businesses in New York were out of business. So now it's 2019. So I'd say that's about 41% now. Saks Fifth Avenue is just about on the skids. Barney's New York is ready to close on October the 24th if they don't get a viable offer on October the 11th. They do have two bidders, but I think that what I see here is I always get told that everyone's buying everything online. But I remind people that if everyone was buying everything online, you would come into the lobbies of your building every day and you would have at least 100 packages there, because that's what it looks like when people shop. So don't believe that everyone is buying everything online, but I do believe that the reason why they want these businesses to close is because the business owners will make a lot more money when you get rid of the sales help and you get rid of all the managers and everything that has to do with retail. Big problem for all the people in America is we have become a service country. So we don't have those good union jobs anymore. Most people in this country, or at least half of them, are working in service jobs. And when the biggest companies in the world, practically, are going belly up right here in New York City, this is a really, really frightening thing. And I really think people should pay attention to it. It's not happening in a vacuum. To me, it's happening systematically. You've been told every day on TV, you get to hear, why retail is going down. They say it is because of the internet. I just don't believe it, because I don't know anyone that's buying everything online. Even millennials don't buy everything online. So I want to say that, and I also want to say that every day you also hear on TV how wonderful the economy is in the United States. It is not a good economy. The economy is in a recession. We're at 3%. We need to be at 5% in order to be a healthy economy. We're at 3%. So we are not in a good position. Many millennials who have graduated college are working service jobs, just flipping hamburgers at places because they can't find any place else to go. So what I see here is almost an on-purpose collapsing of the economy to workers, because the people at the top, the 1%, can never be satisfied. There's never going to be enough for them. And I see what's going on in New York, where they continually build these skyscrapers made out of glass. They're made out of glass because it's cheaper to put a building up made out of glass. Five gorgeous churches in Harlem are going down to be made for 8-story apartment buildings for people that don't live there. But I just want people to really start paying attention to this. Our economy, to me, is going to crash and burn very soon. And I don't know what we're going to do. I don't think we're prepared at all. And we don't know what's going to happen with the dollar. And I just wanted to work this into this conversation right now, that while we're quibbling, I also want to say I agree about Mayor Giuliani, but I want to also point out something that's really obvious that no one has really commented on. And that's the very strange relationship with Trump and Giuliani, because Giuliani more than once has thrown Trump directly under the train. Giuliani thought he was going to get a plum position in the presidency, and he did not get it. And when he didn't get it, he went on TV and he talked about how Trump absolutely did pay Stormy Daniels off. Absolutely he paid that off, and he absolutely knew it. The same thing happened this time when the whistleblower apparently came out. Giuliani was then on CNN. And it's interesting to me that Trump does not fire him, because he fires everyone around him. Everyone that is around him, he has fired. But he has not fired Mayor Giuliani. And the only people that I know that have those kind of relationships, and this is going to sound a little weird, but I'm just putting it out there because I just think it's strange. I know that lovers throw each other under the bus sometimes, but they don't get rid of each other altogether. That's the only other kind of relationship I can think of where you have something like this happening. But that doesn't matter either at this point. What matters is that I think people, regular citizens, better keep their eye on the ball. It's a damn shame that we let our country fall to the ground without a union, that we didn't get involved more with the unions, and they have very little power where you have a union. And I really and truly believe that we're going into some, not just dark times with a recession, but I believe that at the same time you're going to have this parallel, problem with the environment. And so I think it's time for us to get off our asses and start doing a lot more than what we're doing. We've examined it. We've, turned it upside down. We've been in denial of it. But I just think we cannot continue to let the 1% steal everything and just say, oh, that's okay, because that's what we do. That's okay because we don't really feel it yet. Well, I believe we're going to start feeling it really, really soon, and we better start preparing ourselves as best we can.
Thank you, Gwen. And
you're welcome.
It's so true what you say. I don't see how anybody could disagree with it. We have to get ourselves prepared, because it is happening even as we speak. Lincoln from Mount Vernon, you're on the air, but not too much time, I'm afraid.
Yes, good day to you, Trees. Yeah, I want to say that most of us are being disingenuous about what's going on, even in this audience. Let me point out something. You just finished talking with Kim Hart Ives, and none of us are dealing with truth, political truth, and the subterfuge, etc., that's going on right now. And there's no truth on the side of the Democrats. There's no truth on the side of the so-called progressives. No truth on the side of the Republicans. And look at the last Democratic debate. In the last, and Ryan saying in reference to Kim Ives, in the last Democratic debate, Sanders came up with the most vituperative remarks about Maduro of Venezuela. He actually said, was insinuating that Maduro should be overthrown, and he referred to this man who is trying to do what Chavez did as a tyrant. And I hear people in this particular audience supporting Sanders, and everyone in this audience completely ignored this vituperation of Sanders in the last debate. You know, it's like we all have our little idols, the little people we want to deify, and we're acting like any of them any better or less than Trump. They're all the same. They're all, to me, these are nothing but devils fighting amongst each other. And what America is experiencing is what America has done throughout the world, and America deserves this. Countries throughout the world, even what's going on in Haiti right now, is because of America. What's going on in Honduras is because of America. The destruction of Syria is because of America. The destruction of Libya, the destruction of the economy of Jamaica is because of America. And it goes on and on and on. And all of us here sitting crying, all of us, I think we, even in this audience, we deserve this, because we are acting suddenly things are crumbling here. What about all the crumblings that we have caused throughout the world? And I think this audience, too, is very disingenuous. And I think we need to take a stock of ourselves and use an adage like Malcolm X said, chicken is coming home to roost here. And let us stop being so self-righteous. I mean, I heard Sanders with his self-righteous self cursing Maduro. We should have repudiated him for that. And much more to say, but not enough time.
No, not enough time, I'm afraid. But there's always tomorrow, and we pick up and carry on tomorrow when we return to our regular programming. But I understand that WBAI ceased to broadcast as of today. I don't know what's the situation there, and whether it will resume somehow, or whether that's the final nail in the door. We'll see. But thank you so much. I always say it, and I want you to know I really mean it. It is a source of great pride, if I could use that word, that everybody makes an effort on this program to offer something valuable to think about, and that would advance our knowledge, advance our understanding. That is the best benefit of all. So I thank you for being consistent with that. And I thank you. We'll return to each other tomorrow and continue the conversations. Bye-bye.